When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
What is up, Ravens fans? Welcome back to the Purple Chair Podcast, where we amplify women in and around the game. Got a big treat for you this week as we're joined by the host of Good Morning Football, Jamie Erdahl. She's covered some of your favorite NFL players from the SEC to the NFL, and now she talks about the NFL for 3 hours on live television every day, which is no small feat. So without further ado, let's dive in. So, Jamie, where are you from originally? Where'd you go to school? At what point did you know this was kind of the path you were going to take?
I am from Bloomington, Minnesota. It's a big suburb outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I went to a small college in Minnesota for my first 2 years out of high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I had done a few sports media things when I was in high school. To paint a broad brush stroke, I was like a tomboy. I played sports. I played basketball and softball in college. I had done a sports talk radio internship when I was in high school, which in hindsight is a strange thing to do, like as a junior in high school, but I really, really loved it. I loved talking about sports. And so didn't know what I wanted to do academically, go to the small school my first 2 years, and then realized what this was as a path and an opportunity. And it just wasn't going to happen where I was. So I transferred, I applied a bunch of places. My sister was living in Baltimore at the time. She was a nurse at Johns Hopkins, and her now husband was a med student at Hopkins. And so I applied to American University and went there.
Oh, awesome.
So I finished school there, my degree from American University in DC. And it just kind of all came together. I gave up playing like sports competitively, but I just never have left sport. I love it. I love talking about it. It's my whole being.
So when you're at American, kind of what was your path there, kind of going from college into the industry?
I just arrived on campus. I went, you know, it was a great journalism program, but a lot of students at American, they want to do political journalism, rightfully so. You're in DC. And I did not. I wanted to do sports. So I walked into the athletic department at the time, and I just said, I want to do this. And they were great. Like, they didn't really have a ton of students willing to help. And so I did everything. I ran stats at men's basketball games. I called volleyball games on the radio. Haven't played I don't even know what the possession is called in volleyball. Ball. I don't know. I've never played volleyball in my life. Did it on the radio. And they just let me do a ton. I ended up working a little bit with Comcast Sportsnet Washington at the time. I don't know what it's called now. And I just kept doing and trying and doing all the different jobs. Because I'm from Minnesota, born and raised, like my inherent kind of connections, people I knew in television, especially, was back in Minnesota. So I had summer internships when I was off school in Minnesota twice. And then my big one came when I did a summer internship between my junior and senior year at American. And I went up to ESPN and I had a summer in Bristol, Connecticut. And I really learned the backbones of television production. I really love just live television. I think it's so invigorating and addictive. And I just really was like, whatever it is, in front of the camera, behind the camera, anything, I want to do this. I want to be in this. And so I graduated from college in December of 11. And I gave myself a year to get a good on-air job that I really, really loved. Otherwise, I was going to go be a producer or do something else, but still in sports. And in November of that year, 2012, I got my job at NESN and I moved to Boston. And so it was like 11 months later. And here we are in 2022 and 11 years later. Yeah, here I am.
That's so funny. I can relate to the being a DC thing. When I was in college, I interned with Monumental. So like the Wizards and the Mystics and all. And I would go out and like meet people and they'd be like, oh, where are you interning? And they meant like for who, like on the Hill. And I was like, oh, the Wizards. And they're like, huh? There's just like a totally different landscape there. Like that's the one place in the world that's like more keyed into like political everything than sports.
Yeah. I think Monumental was very ahead of its game, actually. I remember interviewing for something like that when I was in school, didn't get it. But I remember they had like a great like media setup like in the facility already. And I actually think they were very ahead of their time in terms of what they were trying to accomplish.
Totally, totally. And they're still crushing it. So fast forward, you know, you do get the position at NESN and then like you end up at CBS. You're covering the SEC there for quite a bit of time. When you're covering a whole division like that, how do you build relationships at each program when you're kind of tasked with knowing everything about everyone?
That's a good question, because when I was on the NFL, it was very much just like helicopter in. You know, I oftentimes felt guilty kind of being amongst like the beat writers, the radio guys, because I'm like, I get it. You're here every day. And now like we just get to come in and have these like secret production meetings on Fridays and you're not allowed and we get all this stuff. It's a weird dynamic. So appreciated about the SEC was indeed what you just said, which is, you know, truth be told, CBS gets the best game of the week. It's why it's TET. It's why it's marketed that way. It is like the SEC. I'm married to a man that's from the Big Ten. So it's hard to say that's the best conference in college football. So, you know, to have the best game of the week, you're really, what I found going from the NFL to the SEC is that the players were so happy to be on that afternoon slot in CBS. And so I really tried to lean into that like, wow, this is really an opportunity for sure the star guys, but also those players that like, you know, this might be their one opportunity. And if this like sophomore fraud that was under recruited or he's a walk-on, he gets a pick and then we get to tell his story because I talked to him on the phone. That to me was such a motivator to like make sure I had compiled all that information. Furthermore, because we were the best game of the week, you're getting a lot of Georgias and Alabamas back to back. You know, like there's agreement that CBS could only have show a team five times in a year, plus the SEC championship. So I think three of my 4 years there, I had six Alabama games.
Wow.
And you can only talk to Tua Tagovailoa or Jalen Hurts or Bryce Young so many times. Like you can't ask for them week in and week out. So, or Joe Burrow, like you have to change it up. So you get kind of these lesser known guys. I'm not saying they're lower quality or anything, lesser known guys. And so you have to kind of snowball all that information. So then honestly, when you're on the sideline or still in the post game, you can't just ask for the same guys every week. So you really I tried to have variety because I think that's what shows that you're not just there to helicopter in and be like, we only care about the stars, you know, because that's not what college football is about.
Right. And when you do have the same team over and over again, kind of being able to bring new perspective to the broadcast like every week as well.
Right. You don't be like, yeah, you said that last week. Like that's like, you know, you want to provide, you want to do something new.
One of the things that I think is so cool is you've talked publicly about how you were carrying each of your daughters in SEC championship trophy presentations. And I mean, to me, that's such a flex for them in like 10 years when they need like two truths and a lie at school or something. Like that's such a great fun fact for them to have.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't really think about it that way until, you know, we were talking about something on the show in August on Good Morning Football. And it was how your kids are involved in the game. And my girls are still so young, 3 and 1. So I'm looking at pictures because my older one did come to one SEC game and it was the worst experience. I will never do that again. and I realized, and my pregnancies were really hard. I get very sick. And so for me, the photos are of like, wow, I can't believe I found a 4-hour window where I wasn't puking. And there I am like standing next to Nick Saban and Ed Ogeron and Joe Burrow. But in the photo, it's like, oh, that's in years. You're right. Years later, I'll remember more so that like I was carrying them. I was pregnant with them. My second one, I didn't really tell anybody. So it was like, how can I stand to make sure people don't know I was pregnant? So I really, really have come to appreciate that, while albeit very challenging when I was in the middle of it.
Sure. So speaking of those challenges, I actually had Aditi Kinkabwala on last season, who I know you probably know from CBS. Yeah. And she kind of talked to me about the logistics of when you are, you know, breastfeeding, when you're going to all these games, you're on the road every week she would try to you know, coordinate her flights home when she'd get her milk frozen and send it back and all those things. So how do you kind of like juggle all of that? I hate the word juggle, but like, you know what I mean? Like handle all of that when you are going through a season where you're on the road so much.
Yeah, navigate it, manage it. So we were really lucky. We had a bus, the SEC, Brad Nessler would call it the iCruiser, and it would follow us around to every game. And this bus was like tricked out. It was fantastic. And I particularly loved it because I would fly from Minnesota to Atlanta. I would drive from Atlanta to Tuscaloosa. And so I would essentially like pump two or three times in transit. By the time I got there, I was like walking into practice at Alabama. Where is my fresh milk going to go? Well, the bus is sitting there. So they had a fridge on the bus. I could throw it in there. And then essentially for me, it was like a race against time because these are a lot of X's and O's go behind this. But essentially, like, you can only have fresh milk be fresh for 3 days. We could freeze it. So I would try to be like, I need to get home by a certain time so I can freeze these suckers. And then my favorite, another favorite flex of mine. And I remember sending this picture to Richard Deitch when he wrote this article, which was I used to label the bags in my freezer as according to which game the milk came from. So it would be like Georgia at LSU. In my mind, I'd be like, oh yeah, I have memories from that. It was just like a nice way to keep it fun. And but also like very motivating, like, look at what I'm doing. I'm staying connected to my girls. And frankly, now that I look back on doing it, like everything seems harder now, but I had like the incredible support of Gary Danielson and Brad Nessler and just really like all of the men that I worked with. Just, they never got freaked out. It was very much just like, if I can do it and if I seem okay with it, they just were like, whatever you need was always kind of the mindset. And I really appreciated that.
Well, yeah, that's really neat. When you were at CBS, you also covered the basketball.
Yeah.
And so I also, when I came out of college, I did NBA and NFL at the same time. And it's a lot to keep up with two sports. So how did you kind of stay up to date with both sports kind of happen at some point simultaneously?
Yeah. So January to me was like a big flip over in my head. I feel like, you know, I naturally, you know, Twitter helps, but like because I played basketball, it's a lot easier for me to hear basketball in my like aura essentially. And it just kind of hangs. So like in November, I would hear about upsets and it would just in college basketball and it would just stay with me. It was just kind of always a part of me. So by the time January rolled around, when I was at CBS, that was very much like a natural page turn because I wasn't doing any playoff games. I would help with some postseason coverage, but it was for them, like there had to be like a transition team and I was a part of that. So I would jump right into doing like studio coverage like during the week. And those were a lot of like mid-major games. And as we all know, and what we love about the NCAA tournament is that the makeup of the tournament nowadays is so much more than just like the cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. So like for me to have done Mountain West and MAC January Wednesday night basketball games in studio helped me when I would get assignments in March for those teams that people are oftentimes like, what, who, where is the school from? So again, in hindsight, it just felt like this is the schedule. And it was kind of a refreshing way because, you know, you can get burned out on football. And you can get burned out on anything that you're doing continuously for so many months. So it was kind of a way to put the pep back in my step, if you will, right, and just kind of focus on college basketball. But really, you know, the A crew at CBS, you know, the Nance and Tracy and whatever, like they just had such a grind, especially on a Super Bowl year, that you had to really pick up the slack or, you know, and just be like, we got you guys until you're able to like come in for the Big Ten tournament.
Right. Yeah. That is like quite a new challenge to then like kind of take up on. Do you have a favorite memory from your basketball coverage? I know you were part of the St. Peter's broadcast and they had that like really cool run.
That was an amazing run. My first, gosh, now was it my first? It's all going to blend together now. But one year I had Georgia Southern and it was the coach and his son. And the son got drafted by the Celtics now, and I'm totally going to blank on their names. But the father in the Sun Belt Championship, the dad was the head coach, and he tore his Achilles celebrating. And so he coached on a stool in the first game, and I think they beat Baylor at a last second shot, which his son hit from the top of the key, like 5 feet off the top of the key, last second shot. And the dad, I know we're not on video, but I could fall off my chair if I wanted to. He like celebrated again, and he fell off his chair. And he cracked his cast from his like torn Achilles. And then, so then we had him again. Oh, RJ something. I cannot believe I'm blanking on it. But anyways, yeah, the Georgia Southern father-son combination, torn Achilles, cracked his cast. We had him again. I think they lost to North Carolina in the second round. But yeah, that was like my beginning of just like, wow. And you get so like addicted to your region and like your team. And then you want for them so badly to continue on, which for us was really cool that we got to go with St. Peter's then. We followed them from 64-32, 16-8. And the fact that they lost North Carolina was cool in general, because then Carolina went on to play Duke. But that was really cool to be with the Peacocks for 4 games too.
Yeah, that's really neat. I went to Duke, so that Carolina Duke game was not super cool for me, but we don't have to talk about that.
Great for television.
It was great TV. We talked about a lot of the highlights, but do you have any trip that you're not excited to have to make anymore now that you're not on the road?
Sure. Yeah. Tuscaloosa is hard to get to.
That's fair.
Yeah. Tuscaloosa is really hard to get to. I think no matter how you cut it, because you got to fly to Atlanta and then you're either flying to Birmingham and then doing like a 45-minute drive, or you fly to Atlanta and drive 3 hours. That's just a lot. It wasn't a lot getting to a lot of these places. It was after the games on Saturdays, we would, no matter where we were, I would say like 10 out of the 12 schools, we would get back on the bus together as a production crew and bus to the Atlanta airport, stay the night, and then get up, you know, 6 a.m. flights. Cause like, it's great to get back to Atlanta, but like, that's really hard to do a 4-hour broadcast. Then you're trying to come down on the bus ride. And then sometimes the bus rides are so long, like 5 hours from Knoxville to Atlanta. Hour 3 or 4, you're like, I love you guys, but you've been in my ears all day. Like, I don't want to hear this anymore. So it was getting home, and then you're just fried when you get home. And Brad and Gary, they would be like, anyways, we were lounging around on Sunday. I'm walking in the door and it's just like, mom, diapers, Brett. Like, it just, so I would say just not traveling, period. Is really lovely.
That's fair. For such a major program, they should really just build a major airport in Tuscaloosa. I mean, everyone's coming there every weekend. Like, you know that.
I know. It's so true. They got space.
To all my Flock wine lovers, Winning Drive is the official wine brand and club of the Baltimore Ravens, and we have a very special promo code for non-members for the holidays. So those last-minute holiday gifts you need to get, we got you covered. Visit winningdrive.com and use the code HOLIDAY15 to get 15% off premium Napa Valley wines or the perfect gift set for your loved ones. I can attest, I did this for Christmas last year. For all of our people, it was fantastic. I mean, who doesn't love to receive wine as a gift? So one more time, that's winningdrive.com and your code is HOLIDAY15.
You alluded to this a little bit before, but before you were on the SEC for CBS, you obviously covered the NFL for the network. Like, what from that time kind of helped you prepare for this new role with Good Morning Football?
Kind of circling back to what you asked me, I think the second question about the SEC, but the relationships,
right?
You know, the PR people bounce around. Some are mainstays, you know, coaches hold them over and whatnot, which I think is amazing. But I still text like a good amount of PR people from the various teams. I would see them at Super Bowls, like even after when I was on the SEC and I would go to Super Bowls, I would see all those PR people would like flock to the Super Bowl. So I think that's really cool. But then also some of the players that have stayed from my time at the NFL, I think are like incredible figures, but the players that I had in the SEC who are now in the NFL that I'm like talking about football, I think are fantastic. It's the relationships though. And for the SEC players in particular, in my mind, I'm like, they don't remember me, but I really enjoy like following them now, like in a not creepy way, but like Damian Pierce, for example, like the Texas running back, like that's so awesome. And his like angry run tape that he had for Florida when he like knocked a guy's helmet off, like the fact that we keep playing that and it was like one of our games, like it was just, it's really cool to kind of hang with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, you probably know the backstories of a lot of these like SEC guys better than a lot of people that are just covering them from like an NFL perspective too, which is neat. So we are talking about Good Morning Football, obviously. So what was kind of the interview process? You know, what went into your decision to kind of change gears to this new role?
I really like studio. Sideline reporting is a gift, but it's also a challenging gift because I think like the more you know, the more you want to share. And so reporting in a nutshell is, you know, your best 15 to 30 seconds, your most important 20 seconds. And that is vital, but that's also, like I mentioned, a challenge. So I had been doing studio stuff for basketball. And then that interest coupled with the travel was just getting really challenging with young kids. And Kay Adams and I have the same agent. And so he, you know, knew that she was going to make a change. And so I kind of started this like grander conversation, you know, between the two networks and just CBS, knowing that that was something that allowing me to do was just really important to me. I think is fantastic. And I just very much felt like I was perfectly qualified for the job. We all think we are, you know, but I really leaned into the fact that like, gosh, I can really blend these three things that are so much a part of me, which is like hosting football, both NFL and SEC, but then also, I guess those are my three things. Yeah. The hosting and then those two factions. So it was a lot of meetings. It was a lot of conversations. It was just, you know, a lot of life stuff too, like what that looks like. I had to move my family from Minnesota to New Jersey. And, you know, that's a sacrifice, but then to come off the road, I think is the most important part. Be able to pick my kids up every day from their little school is awesome.
Right. That's really cool. So I guess like kind of when you are deciding to make this change, do you do like screen tests with current hosts? Like how does that kind of logistically work?
At least for the way that this decision-making process went, it was just a lot more meetings and conversations. I think they knew what I could do.
Right.
They being the, you know, decision makers at hand, Michael Davies, Mark Quenzel, they knew what I could do. I had known Mark Quenzel, especially at NFL Network for a long time. I had done some games for them in London in particular years back. And CBS and NFL Network have a pretty good partnership, I think, over the years because of Thursday Night Football. So, you know, there was a lot of just like twirling conversations between a lot of people. And then I didn't meet the guys until they had informed me that I got the job. And Jason McCourty was like guest hosting. And so I think they brought me in like under the cover of darkness. And we did like a pretend hour together, I think more so to test out McCourty than anything. And it was just easy. Like Kyle always jokes, like, we're always going to remember that as like this really strange time in our lives, but it worked. And it was, and like now, ever since then, we've all kind of always just stamped our group. Like, we're just easy. We hang out, we chat. It's not a big to do. We get the job done, we go home, and we're back the next day.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, like that chemistry, like was kind of easy and like automatic almost for you. So what is that kind of like as you are? I mean, obviously, you know, the show has changed since its initial onset. So with you and Jason coming in, how do you guys kind of as a foursome now kind of build that chemistry?
I'm so grateful that I got to start with Jason McCourty. He is just, I've really enjoyed learning from him. And then in like such a cool way, when we were in London and Munich together as a group, he and I have really been able to talk about how much he's been able to learn from me because he's just brand new to television. Like
right.
Television's rookie of the year, in my opinion. And so I feel so flattered that he, you know, feels that way about like how we operate as like four different TV professionals, like from four different walks of life. Like it sounds like a sitcom, but like that's, I think that's really how we look at each other. Like
right.
We're all really good. We all really pride ourselves in what we do, but we're all different and that's okay. And that actually is what makes the show good. And, you know, some days it's a heavier lift for others than, but there's no, you know, and I've always operated this way. And Jason and I totally agree with him coming from like the team atmosphere as well. It's just like, we before me every day, it has to be like that. I think that's always what works. And for me at CBS, when you're doing a broadcast for a game, the broadcast is never about you. It's about the game. It's about the coaches. It's about the players. So I don't really know it any other way. I've actually had to do like a little bit more work, like inserting my, like what I believe.
Right.
And so that's been a challenge for me. You know, around mid-November, I got kind of burned out, honestly, on hearing my own voice. I had a really just like challenging week on the show because I just was like, oh, I'm over this. Like, I can't imagine just feeling like I'm so important that people like think that they need to hear this. But I had to have a bit of a reset and be like, okay, it's more than that. You know, I just kind of worked on the other guys that week and we got through it. So it's hard to learn. It's a new skill from that respect. But I just appreciate that like Jason and I came in together. I couldn't, even if we were a week apart, I would not have imagined like starting on anything but the same exact day together.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the wind down tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Yeah, that's really cool. It is interesting because like kind of like you said, you know, when someone's turning on TV to watch the SEC championship, they're not turning it on to hear people talk, you know, yeah. But like this show is so successful because people do want to hear from the four of you, yeah. Which is really, really cool. You mentioned that you guys went to Germany and England for Good Morning Football. So what were those trips like? And logistically, I'm just kind of curious, like, how do you take a show from a studio in New York and just transplant it all the way across the world?
Oh, man. Well, luckily with London, they had been there before. So they had a couple different spots that we actually had a split show that week. We're 2 days in a studio, 3 days outside. So they knew the spots and they had a whole team. Here's the crazy thing about London was that I'm going to generalize the timing, but essentially Queen Elizabeth passed away like 10 days before we were supposed to arrive. And I found this so fascinating. And I hope I'm not like sharing trade secrets like from Great Britain television production, but there were like lifelong contracts made between like the royals and television people in the UK. Like when the queen passes, you will be a part of the funeral, the procession and broadcast, wow, whatever. So I guess it was a huge challenge. She passed and then everything was happening. And then we arrived like 3 days later. The point is there was like a day or two there where like no one over there was responding to emails. And NFL Network was like, are we going to be able to pull this off? Like, we need to confirm, like, do we have our set? Do we have our technicians? Do we have this? And everyone was busy with the Queen's funeral. Of course, that's understandable. And so it was just this, we weren't really privy to this until we arrived. And it was like, everyone we worked with, they were like, oh, it's so nice to see you. You know, we have just been coming off such a hard time here. And we were just like, what do you mean? And it was just like, oh my God, it was so mind blowing to be like, wow, what a wild time to be alive. We're like, God forbid this would have been like delayed, like into the, I mean, who knows what would have happened, but it was just things you don't think about essentially over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's crazy.
I know. So we were outside for a couple of days, on the background on the River Thames, which was amazing. We had people come to see us, our set, and like they traveled, they took days off work. It was so amazing. That was again, the first time I've ever experienced like, wow, people watch us for us. And I really, that was a cool moment. And then Munich was amazing for everybody because it was just brand spanking new. We were in this old building, an old bank. And again, like the operations people at NFL Network flew over there a bunch of times for site surveys. They had to take out a wall inside this bank. It was crazy. And then we were able to be outside a little bit in the square. And it was funny, like on Monday, it was like, you can't leave this 5-foot radius in the square. And by Friday, Kyle was like running, like booking it, like through around the fountain, like past the, you know, old town square church. And you're like, Kyle, like rein it back in. So we took our liberties there, but it takes an incredible amount of people and coordination and a lot of trips before us to set the scene essentially. But man, when we get there, it's like this amazing, well-oiled machine that we were like so grateful for. But again, the same thing, so many people just like descended upon Munich to see how football and the NFL was engaging with the town, but also like to stop by our set, which we thought was so fantastic.
Yeah, that's really neat. What's like an average day in the life on Good Morning Football for you? Like, when do you have to get up? When do you have to get to the studios? Obviously, it's on TV quite early, so I know that your day has to start pretty early.
So, yes, but they do an amazing job. I think, you know, the thing that was preached to me upon my interview process and getting the job was just like, it's taken them 6 years or over the last 6 years, they really did their damnedest to make the show as sustainable as possible for everybody that works on it, not just the four of us. So I get up at 4:45. It's actually not that bad. Like people are really kind of surprised by how late that is, quote unquote. All that being said, in like a matter of 9 minutes, I let my dog out of the house, brush my teeth and pull on some sweatpants because everything is here, which is amazing. Hair, makeup, my clothes are here. So the person that arrives in the building looks very different than the person that gets mic'd up at 6:57. But I walk in the door at about 5:40. I'm in makeup, hair and makeup for an hour. I'm in hair and makeup for an hour. Jason McCourty arrives in hair and makeup at 6:40 and he is out the door by 6:42. And then Peter and Kyle are down to a fine art of like 6:47 and 6:52. Like they just are like in, out, hairspray, powder, whatever, which sometimes that infuriates me to no end. Cause I'm in my dressing room getting dressed and I hear Jason leave. See you guys later. And I'm like, seriously, like through the door, like you're just out of here. And so, yeah, it's very smooth. I sit in hair and makeup. I go over the show with one of our producers that's with us on site here. And then we're off and running. We kind of greet each other like at 6:58 when we all are up. I don't really see the guys except for Jason. We're all on the set and get mic'd up and we're off and running. And it's just go, go, go. And then at 9:57, It's kind of like we like race to our cars downstairs. Like, here we go. Like, who's in the car first at 10:02 and walk in the door at 11. It's awesome. There's work to do at night. You know, our show, like the way it's set up, the questions and whatnot, they send us those at night. So I put like an hour or two in at night answering some stuff. And there's a whole great production crew at night. And then we start the wheel over the next day.
So we're taping this like on a Tuesday morning. So like last night with there being a primetime game, like how do you take that in like in real time? Or are you kind of like catching up this morning, like as you're getting ready for the show?
In all honesty, it depends on the game. Mm-hmm. I kind of read the room. For example, Sunday night, Colts Cowboys. Now that one, you know, that was kind of a dogfight because that was into the third quarter. And so I'm like, are into the fourth quarter. I was like, seriously? Like, we're going to do this? And then lo and behold, you know, the fourth quarter happened for the Cowboys. So I probably fell asleep after it was like 45-21. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it just depends on the night. But like that one, you kind of are enraptured last night with like Brady and just like, really? Like 3 points, man. So I like to say, I like, oh, I don't care about this one or I can catch up on it, but like, it's hard not to watch, you know? And so
yeah.
I keep it on, you know, but then the rest of the nights I do my best to like go to bed early because I know those Monday nights, Sunday night, Thursday nights, like they keep me up.
Yeah. And they stack up. There's so many primetime games. Seriously. Now, so many days of the week, you wouldn't be getting any sleep.
And they're good and they're meaningful, especially this time of year. They're going to become a lot more meaningful.
I guess kind of with that, what's like a weekend like for you now? Are you watching Red Zone on Sunday? Like, how do you take in all the games over the weekend?
Yep. So like I said, I have a 3-year-old, 3.5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And it took me a couple weeks to realize like, wow, I cannot do both on Sundays. I have to really like sit and focus. The 1 o'clock games, there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And that to me, the 1 to 4 o'clock window on Sunday for me is I have to sit and watch Red Zone. And then I have 2 games up like on a Surface and my phone, actually like on NFL Plus. And I just take notes on like a Google Doc with another producer that's on the show. And it's just like, we kind of fill in the blanks on like things we miss. Because if I get behind on the 1 o'clocks, like those are a lot harder to catch up on than the fours or the Sunday night game. So yeah, if I have to like kind of clear out any time, it's that 1 to 4 window. But again, inherently, like we're a football house. My husband loves to watch. He loves the Vikings. And so it's on all day. But my like sit my ass in a chair is 1 to 5 o'clock. And luckily that coincides with nap time and whatever. So like, I'm pretty lucky in that respect, but yeah, I've done it a lot of, you know, it's my first season doing this this way. So it's a lot of different, I'm still kind of trying different things on for size. Mm-hmm. I really like the holiday weeks, to be honest, because like Thursday knocked out 3 games that like, oh great.
Yeah.
Thing. Like, I'm really looking forward to next week. We've got a triple header on NFL Network. It's like, the Ravens is one of them on a Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, great. It spreads it out more. You can like, you can really focus on the games, which I really like.
Yeah, that is helpful. I totally get that. So we've talked a lot about Good Morning Football. So I guess kind of from here, you know, it's really been like for Nate Burleson, especially, it was a kind of a jumping off point for him. And he's kind of made that transition to just kind of going beyond sports, a la the Michael Strahan's, the Robin Roberts. Is that something that's like interested to you, like long term, or is it you really want to stay like football specific?
You know, it very much used to not be something that I was interested in. I'm still not sure, but however, it does feel more attainable just from like a skill set standpoint right now.
Right.
You know, what I really kind of hung my hat on in making this decision to pivot to this was doing 3 hours of live television, no matter the topic, is a skill that once you have it, no one can take it from you. And it's challenging. Like, you could have a 3-hour show on the elections, which is kind of, or the weather, or like anything. But like, I think once you can do it, regardless of, you know, Lauren Shahadi is a friend of mine. She's on MLB Network. Like, she could do 3 hours right now on like the trade, whatever's happening, free agency in baseball. And she just will, no problems. So that, to me, just having that skill is just kind of what I'm focused on right now. And just like, honestly, learning, like Kyle Brandt to me is one of the most like creative and energetic like television professionals I've ever been around. And that's not just like because of Angry Runs, like watching him operate and like come up with his like takes, how he delivers them, the way his literal presence, whether it be he is talking about his interview features that he has been doing with like the war on Ukraine, or talking about, what was he on today? The Nextdoor app, and how he was like relating it to the NFC South. Like, what? And so, and then Peter Schrager's just historical like touchstone and context, how he can apply that to like anything, literally at any time. So I think right now, like while jobs like that, that Nate Burleson made such an incredible jump, I think, you know, that would be amazing, you know, but most importantly, I need to just improve this skill set, I think, like first and foremost. And you can't just be a one trick pony on 3 hours of television. And so I think that's what I'm finding kind of most important is like learning, just being a sponge.
Great. Was that daunting to you to kind of prepare for when you were kind of first stepping into this role?
No, that part never really got to me. I think to me, that meant it was time like to just expand a little bit. In the last year before I got this opportunity, I was really starting to think long and hard about like, maybe I should do radio too. Maybe I should, you know, I was trying, my brain was kind of floating into like these long form thoughts anyways. So that's why this really just felt like the right thing to do right now. I've never been at a loss for words, let's just say. And the genie is out of the bottle now. And so like, they asked me to do the 2 sideline games internationally. And it was, like, oh man, I got to wrap this up again. Like you got to reel the fish back in because it can no longer be just like, you know, like if you can stretch this to 2 minutes, which is like a question that you are never asked to do as a sideline reporter, you're like, here's 25 seconds, but if you can do it in 18, that'd be better. It's like, well, why don't you just tell me 18 like that?
Do you have any advice for like young fans that'll listen to this to get into the industry?
Kind of like when I speak to my time in college, like I did some random stuff. Like I had a professor once in a class, a broadcasting class. Her name is Meredith Geisler. She's a PR professional. And like, I literally just spoke to her on the phone. She still works with Grant Hill to this day. Grant Hill calls me the other day, by the other day, I mean like September. And he's like, FaceTimes me. First of all, that's cool. Grant Hill FaceTime.
That's really cool.
And I'm like, Grant, how you doing? And he's like, and he like turns and there's my college professor. I'm like, this is amazing. Anyways, she asked me in a class, she asked the class, I have an opportunity this weekend. Could any students volunteer? Whatever. And so I just like was very much in the like, I don't really know anybody at the school yet. I'll do it. So it was at the DC Marathon, the Washington DC Marathon. And I went and I read promos every like 8 minutes for like 6 hours. And these promo in the armory, like in the, you know, all the runners are walking through, they're getting their bibs and they're like, if you'd like 15% off cold running gloves, go to the booth 28 in the southwest corner of the armory. And like, it was like this script that, or this like stack of pages that was this big. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? But like Meredith really appreciated that. Yeah. I went to a marathon site and I sat there and I did it and I spoke. I don't care what the skill is, but like do it. Just do all the things, you know, hand stats out, run stats, help with the audio guys. Like just do everything. Don't say no. Like you're not better than somebody else. Like you're only as good as the person that's going to get you on television. You're only as good as the person who's going to turn your mic on and get your frequency right. You might think that you are the thing that's putting the words out, but like so many more people are involved in that. So just like do everything because no one can take it away from you once you've done the skill.
I love that. This is also a very small world because I went to college with her daughter.
Meredith Geisler?
Natalie Geisler. Yes.
That was Duke.
Yes. She was in my sorority at Duke. Yep. That's really crazy. I was like, what do you say? I was like, Meredith Geisler. I know that name.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I was kind of the same way too. Like I raised my hand to go. One of my college professors was doing an interview with Coach K and he's like, does anyone want to come? And I was like, yeah, I'm at this college because of this man. Like, yes, I want to be in the same room as him. And like that turned into me getting a position with our like football team's TV show, just because I like started talking to the guy that I was walking in with, you know, yeah. So you just really never know. It's like, I love that jump at every opportunity, but that is a crazy, crazy small world.
And the fact that like, what a badass woman, like she's teaching this class 11 years ago. At the time she was also working with Ray Allen, but the fact that she's like still working with Grant and they like, she was at his book promo tour and it was just like, now I'm working with Grant. It was just like, oh my God, this life is just so great.
That's awesome. I love Grant Hill, you know, the Duke, my Duke guy right there.
Who doesn't? Like, I have a problem with anybody who doesn't like Grant Hill.
That's awesome. I have one last thing for you here. We have a little rapid fire to finish. So your favorite game you've covered live?
Oh, any sport?
Yes.
Okay. This is when I was in Boston, I did 1 year of hockey and I'm happy to have learned. I'm happy that I'm not doing it anymore. However, playoff hockey in Canada is incredible. It was game 5 of the 2nd round of the Stanley Cup finals. And it was Boston Bruins at Montreal Canadiens. And like the French national anthem at playoff hockey in Canada is like life-changing.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Your worst travel assignment ever. Just Tuscaloosa still.
I covered a surfing event, a world surfing event in, I will not remember the town in California, but I will tell you, it was very hard to get to. It was somewhere like 3 to 4 hours north of Los Angeles, an hour south of Bakersfield. It was in the desert land. And I don't know his name. Everybody would. It's like the really famous bald Kelly Slater has a surfing emporium in this random place, middle of California. It's a man-made wave. CBS broadcast this like world surfing championship. And this was the worst part of it. So I go there. It's like a 4-hour event. 3 hours on Facebook Live with like a play-by-play surfing guy and analyst. And then this girl, her name was Rosie, the reporter, and she was like Australian, or she had some incredible accent, and she knew the sport like the back of her hand. She's like, I'm Rosie, I'm doing the Facebook Live part, then you're taking over for CBS in the final hour. And I was just like, seriously, Rosie, me? Like, I don't know what is going, I don't know where I am, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm just going to take over for you. I felt so terribly. I just wanted to be like, can you just dub over me as I talk about this? I was doing these interviews and I was like standing in water. And I just was like, what is happening right now? It was so hard to get to. I was in the middle. It was like farms, some more farms, a pool. It was insane.
Like you say surfing, I'm thinking like Hawaii. Like that sounds pretty cool, but that's a little brutal.
Man-made thing in the middle of, I'm thinking this was 6 hours inland of any of the ocean. Like
that is bizarre.
So bizarre.
And everything sounds better when you're Australian too. So like, I wouldn't want to compete with that.
This also reminds me of one time I was, for the first time ever, I was like being an analyst on a women's college basketball game on CBS. And I'm doing like the Conference USA semifinals. And so the quarterfinals, I'm watching quarterfinals. And the game was on Facebook Live the day before. And I'm watching the broadcasters are in front of me. Turns around, the analyst, Cheryl Swoops. And I was like, really, CBS? Couldn't get Cheryl Swoops to stay for the semifinals? You're going to ask me to do this? Got to be kidding.
That's a tough act to
follow. Very intimidating. Very intimidating. We got there though.
Okay. I have a few Good Morning Football ones for you too. So your favorite Good Morning Football guest so far, there's always someone cool on there. I feel like,
Oh my gosh. Well, we had Blake Shelton on last week.
I did see that. That's hard to top.
And he watches like every morning with intensity.
Yeah.
He got on me on my case about something from September.
He's like, Cardinals, right? Cardinals fan. Yeah. Did I make that up? Okay. Yeah. So he's locked in. Yeah. I will see him like tweet at the show and stuff. Like he is tuned in.
I love
giving
it.
Notes.
Yeah.
That's great. Your favorite Good Morning Football segment.
Oh, You know, Jason's ooh wee. I really like ooh wee. He highlights the defensive plays of the week, but just the fact that he has committed to the ooh wee. And we all like do the shimmy. And then in London, he was blimey. And it was, yeah, I'll go with ooh wee.
I love that. That's great. And your favorite day of the week on Good Morning Football?
Fridays move, you know, like that. I think that it's, you're coming off of hopefully a good game the night before and you're just real fired up, like about, because at this point you've talked a lot about the various games and you've kind of attached, everyone gets this one game that they get real fired up about that weekend. And so you're really like leaning into it. You're trying to convince the other ones why your game is better than their game. And then you're like released to the wilderness, like on Friday. And it feels like you kind of put all of your like guts and glory into the week. And now you're like, well, now the football gods have it. And the next time we talk about it, like next time we talk about Dolphins 49ers, like we don't know what it's going to be. So I really like Fridays.
Your dream Ravens guest.
Oh, my dream Ravens guest. For a lot of reasons, I would love to have Lamar on, but Patrick Queen was really fun to have on when I covered him in the SEC. So plus then he and like J-Mac could do like some secondary chat. So like, I'll go Patrick Queen.
He's a fan favorite here for sure. We love him internally. He's like one of the best to work with. So yeah. I think he would be a great guest. I'm sure he would honestly probably love to come in studio
right
off season. So I'll get that little plug in for him. Yeah.
Perfect.
We can make that happen for sure. And then you're just in general bucket list event or person to cover. It doesn't have to be sports, but it can be.
Oh, wow. Bucket list event or person to cover. I mean, I always would have loved to see like, I'm going to go backwards first. I always would have loved to see like Michael Jordan play in person, especially like a high profile moment. Yeah. I've been so blessed to like Super Bowls, Final Fours. Gosh, I just, I'm drawing a blank. I haven't been, you know, my mom is trying to get to all the baseball stadiums. She's like over halfway done. And I have taken her to an all-star game. And I would love to take her to a World Series, like a late game World Series. I think that'd be amazing. And like an old timey, like a Camden, you know, like just,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I feel like some of the players that you've gotten to cover too, or like one day we'll look back on some of like the Lamar Jacksons of the world, like they're becoming kind of the next generation of Michael Jordan, but I'm with you. That'd be so cool if we could go back and do that.
Yeah. I do think about that a lot. Like, who are the guys that we are watching play right now that like future television's Peter Schrager is going to be like, you know, reminds me of, and then it's just like, it's not even like a deep cut. Like, who's the next transformational, like Justin Tucker? Like, who is that guy? Is he born?
Right.
He like, it's playing soccer right now. We don't know him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And it's exciting, especially like when you do have that kind of the SEC background, like a lot of them are coming from there, you know? Yeah. So it's cool that you have that perspective. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for the time, Jamie. This is great.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Good Morning Football continues to be such a fun watch, and Jamie is such a big piece of that now. I'm always impressed by how fresh they keep it, especially during the quiet times in the off season. And this is our final episode of season 2. I hope you've enjoyed it. We've taken you inside the castle, quite literally with an in-person taping, and shared the inner workings of the franchise, from the team's nutrition to meeting the legendary Miss Val and learning more about Kyle, Nick, and Mike from the ones that know them best. I hope this season has taught you more about the Ravens than you can get anywhere else. I appreciate each of you who have listened, tweeted, and subscribed all season long. And don't forget to leave us a review, rate, and subscribe if you're enjoying the podcast. Thanks for a great season 2. I'll talk to you soon.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it. Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.